I said we had all grades and classes in the home, illiterate, uneducated, educated and cultured, rather as I had to teach when I worked as a tutor, organizer in the Maidstone prison experiment. Only those were prisoners of the state, segregated from their fellows by rule and power. Here no one is kept against his will or desire. Mostly the patients are happy enough and wish to stay in this temporary security. They cannot move on until they have, literally, seen the light, or at least as much of the light as they can assimilate at their present stages. There is a medical man here. He has been with the sisters for some space, a brilliant man, alas, he was a drug addict. But more of him later. Generally speaking, the dwellers here are of all types, some advanced in many ways, who are literally passing through the spheres. Perhaps you will be interested in my latest contact. I can scarcely call him a pupil, for on Earth he was a distinguished scientist. This man has not long arrived here, from another sphere, and Mother Florence suggested that we talk together. He has a very fine mind, exact and logical, as befits a scientist, of course. It is a mental thrill for me to talk with him. But he was on Earth a complete agnostic, even an atheist, although he tells me that always his researches came back to the point that there must be a certain X factor which was beyond man's conception, the perfect creative factor, a supreme mind. Yet in all his work he would not allow that this could be a sign that life was a matter of progressing consciousness. Indeed, although he has explained to me the wonderful pattern and energy inherent in every atom of matter, and admitted that each atom has a certain measure of consciousness, yet never did he apply this to man himself in the possibility of survival. His thesis was that such consciousness was inherent in the particles of matter and remained as such for the varying type of work for which these atoms were grouped. His theory was, and still is, that the grouping of the atoms and cells fixed their effect. Their rotation at certain rates of vibration determined the density. Therefore, by changing the patterns and varying the vibrations, man could produce differing results. And that was what he was doing, exploring the possibilities of changing the patterns and producing finer, or less dense, types of matter. This, of course, is exactly what progress means for Earth life in lightening the particles of matter into less density. Only now we have talked together and agree that this X factor is actually and eternally the light of creative force, and we came to the thrilling conclusion that the scientists' attempt at changing the vibratory rate of atomic matter is the same as all the ancient teaching of the light permeating the density of man's immersion in matter. If man could keep the divine light in mind, which, when out of the prison of the body we can realize as the permanent life, man has the power to transform those particles into a finer vibration. The difficulty is that, when we are bombarded by the consciousness of the denser vibrations which make up our bodies, and all the so-called matter of the material world, the light eternal is doused and dimmed, sometimes being extinguished altogether. It has been a wonderful experience, discussion with this man. He sees now that consciousness is the expanding X factor which goes on becoming stronger and more able to lighten matter, and that before him lies a glorious conception of a universe of ever increasing light and therefore, ever lightening matter with which to experiment. Now he is absorbed in the wonder, not only that he himself is a unit of consciousness, but also because of his transition from the body. The pattern of his own energy ratio has changed, has become less dense, so that he is now able to work at a stepped, up intensity, using a wider field of magnetic force. What a lot I have learned from him. Here are two of us conferring, he with his great knowledge of atomic reactions in matter and I, with my inherent conviction that the spirit is the light, the X factor, which is the focus, the power and motive of and for all. You can understand how thrilling and exciting this is. My friend, I will call him Mr. M, will not be here in this rest home much longer. I could say unfortunately, for I shall miss our sessions. He will be going on to join a group of scientists working on the higher planes. But he says that he will still make contact with me, even though I elect to stay on here for a while. And, of course, there is telepathy of the mind for us to radio ideas to each other. He has much enjoyed the peace of my garden whilst going through the purgation of his concrete mind, and we have had exciting experiments with meditation and also with light transmission to my plants and flowers, being able to observe the results immediately. "There's your X factor," I said to him once, with my old enthusiasm. "Look how the light of love and beauty has transformed those flowers into the glowing blossoms they now are." "Yes," he said with the characteristic little shake of the head which always comes when he has tabulated a result. "Yes. If only we had been able to realize that cause and effect when we were on Earth. But we will." I felt suddenly illumined. "Your researches in the next plane will be able to help the Earth dwellers to know." "By telepathy, you mean?" "By telepathy," I agreed. "And here I am already reaching you on Earth about it. But this is only a taste of that which he, and the scientists he is about to join, will be able to transmit through advanced minds now coming into incarnation on the Earth plane for the coming age. This is thrilling and soul-satisfying work here. I realize how blessed I am to be able to contact such advanced minds, and to be enabled to transmit my experiences and adventures for those on Earth to read, so that they may anticipate with spiritual joy the fullness of life to come. An hour or so later, I have realized that you have been going over all this in your mind, and here is the partial answer to the questions you have been formulating," I said to Mr. M. After a fascinating discourse on protons and electrons and points of bombardment and racial patterns, etc. "So now you see that consciousness is on an upward spiral, and progresses onwards. Even your own. How do you feel about it now?" He grinned. "I always accept facts," he said, "and this is a fact, isn't it? I think. I reason. I learn. In fact, I still am. One can't dispute facts. Some people called the Earth life a great illusion," I persisted. "This could also be an illusion." He shook his head. "I can't accept that Earth was an illusion. I was there, solid enough to our senses. It was certainly the result of a specific rate of vibration. So if you want to say that this rate of vibration was only the perception of substance by the state of consciousness of our brain, minds, I'll agree to that. A projection of our limited minds maybe, but not an illusion. We created our surroundings." "What created?" I asked. "Thought." "And your X factor?" "Still thought, sister. But of varying vibration and density. So that using more X factor, you'd get a quicker rate of vibration? And a finer type of thought creation?" He gave his characteristic headshake. "Of course. Now I've got it from your angle. More light. A wider conception. We had all that light all the time. And so few of us knew it." "The churches and all the religions of the world knew it," I protested. "Maybe, but I was a scientist. They were building up a theory which nobody had proved. And now? Now I've proved one thing. I, as a mind, and with a lighter body survive. But you've proved, partially, the characteristic of the X factor." Again he demurred. "I haven't proved it. Yet, sister. I've seen it appear to work in our experiments. But I do feel that I am at the beginning of a very exciting quest, instead of at the end of all my researches which I had expected. And that is enough for the moment. You see how this purgatorial experience works? We don't alter fundamentally, but bit by bit, we move away from Earth ideas and limitations, and advance more into light and wisdom. 1st of January 1966 I told you that I would relate my experiences with, and the story of, this brilliant surgeon who is here with us and who, in his lifetime, indulged in drug taking until it became an addiction. This man has a brilliant mind. On Earth he was renowned for the skill of his hands and brain in certain physical operations. I will not tell you what part of the human body he made his special study, as that might reveal his identity. And here we preserve as much anonymity of our physical life as we can. His skill was a legend in certain medical quarters. But he became a drug addict, unreliable and uncertain. His health broke and here he is with us in the new life. He is a striking looking man, for now he is recapturing the enthusiasm and dedication of his youth, and consequently his body has molded itself with all the strength and vigor of a young man. He has deep, set eyes and a fine head, leonine you would say in your astrological terms, and long, sensitive fingers. To have seen those hands and fingers manipulating scalpels must have been a wonderful and moving experience. But to his story, as he told it to me, it all started with an unfortunate affair that came about at a certain period of my life. My early 40s. There had been trouble in my domestic affairs and I had fallen in love with a very beautiful but heartless woman, who intended to smash my home life, and did. During this period of emotional upset and turbulence I had the terrible misfortune to lose a patient during an operation. To be absolutely honest, and one can be nothing else here, the knife slipped and cut into a vein. The operation had to be suspended whilst this was attended to and the patient's heart failed. In lay circles this was treated as an unfortunate accident. In medical circles my colleagues assured me that the dead man's heart would never have stood the length and severity of the operation anyhow, but I knew better. I had not been in my real state. In that state in which I performed all my operations. Since I was a young man I had always known that the surgeon was within me. Not I, but this all, knowing, all, perfect someone who, when I stood aside and let him take over, performed miracles of surgery through my brain and hands. I had made it a practice to keep quiet and be alone for a while on the days when such skill was required in the course of my work, so as to contact him. I was never a religious man. I don't think I regarded him as God or Christ, but he was the strength and the cunning of my hands. His was the inspiration which guided and governed my brain. I was perfectly sure and certain of that, although I never spoke of it to others. Without him and his judgment, skill and serenity, I was as nothing. And when each operation was over and I went to the tap to wash up, I used to feel physically sick at the possibility that, one day, I might lose touch with him. I recall I always said thank you after each extended session in the operating theater. But on this particular day when the accident occurred, I had rushed to the hospital after an emotional row with the woman I thought I loved. There had been no time for quiet, or for recollection of my celestial surgeon if I may call him this. I was in an emotional turmoil. After the patient had died and been taken away, I went to the sister's office and collapsed. Whatever anyone said, I knew. I had lost touch with the inner one. I was desolate. I remember that the hospital authorities insisted that I take a holiday. I went to Sicily for 3 weeks, returning calm in mind and with hope renewed. But back in the rush and tension of a surgeon's life, something new now reared itself in my mind. I became afraid. I tortured myself that perhaps the inner surgeon would not be there to guide and help me. I became a soul torn apart, tortured, terrified and almost impotent with the fear and dread that what had happened once might happen again. You see, sister, I had no knowledge or experience of tuning in to reach this great inner spirit, as I am being taught now. Had I realized then that he is, as Christ instructed us, ever ready to be contacted, I might have had strength to go on without making the muddle I did of my life. But to resume. I could see, and others warned me, that I was heading for a nervous breakdown. I began to take sleeping drugs to nullify those long terrifying hours of the night when fear takes hold of the brain. And then a similar operation was presented to me. Life is always like that, I have learned. The rope of one's character has to be tested at its weakest part. When I examined the man who was to become my patient, the knowledge went like an electric shock through me. This was an exact replica of the operation which had been so disastrous only 6 months earlier, a very specialized, very delicate, cutting away of diseased tissue from a most vital part of the human body. I went to pieces utterly. To save a lot of painful explanation, I took a drug which I knew would clear my brain, and numb the persistent nagging fears to which I had allowed myself to succumb. It worked. I was calm and efficient. I thought I contacted the surgeon. The operation was entirely successful. But that was to be my Achilles heel. I began to rely on the effect of the drug. It seemed to separate away my personal self with all its fears of failure and inadequacy so that the inner one became the surgeon as before. More and more I fell into this bog of tranquility. Deeper and deeper I sank until I could no longer operate without the drug. That was my weakness. Only now there was the added torture of realizing that weakness. Of knowing that strength had left me. I was becoming more and more addicted to this outside stimulation to calm the personal self, and, God help me, I dare not give up for fear of being left entirely alone. I went on for nearly 10 years like this. Oh, yes, I performed some remarkable operations. True. But they were the inner surgeon's triumphs, not mine. I was becoming but a poor shell of a man and without medication. Neither my brain nor my body would obey me. If there is hell on earth, that was it. Progressively I became the slave of the drugs, now more than one, which I was taking. My mind was in agony, my body attacked by disease and my soul was lost, alone and frightened. You know the rest, sister. My mind broke. I was certified as unsound, put away into a home and there, at length, I was relieved of the diseased body and the illusions of the earth brain. And now? Francis speaks. I was much moved by his story, as we all were. He has had long talks with Mother Florence, with dear Father Joseph, and he has sat in quiet meditation with me, here in my golden garden. But now I must tell you of the wonderful experience which has released him from wrong judgment, blame and remorse. I was allowed to participate in this experience. With Mother Florence and Sister Hilda I went to the operating theater, as we call it here. Of course, this hasn't the same connotation as on Earth. Dr. X was already there in the care of Father Joseph. The room, if you could call it such, is a long rectangle with a kind of domed ceiling that gives the impression of unlimited space. We sat facing a vista of blueness which appeared to shimmer. There is no wall, just a deep cerulean blue space. I seemed to hear singing, though there is no organ or choir, but there was a faint music of the spheres which is quite indescribable, so soothing that one's spirit rises to float out and participate in the sound. Suddenly, without preamble, this blue vista broke up, and became a cinema or television screen. Pictures began to emerge on it. They were not superimposed as in a cinema, but seemed to grow into it from the very ether itself. These pictures appeared to form themselves. They showed moments of stress, moments of triumph, moments of failure in the earth life of Dr. X. We saw patients, we watched him in his diagnoses, we followed him to the theater and witnessed his operations, and as we watched, we became conscious, as he did, of the great light that enfolded him as he worked. Light. How much I am learning of the meaning of that word here. How deeply I am beginning to realize the depth of those words light which lighteth every man that cometh into the world. How paltry is our conception and understanding of that light. But we will talk of this more, when I have learned and experienced more. The pictures on the screen went on and on. We were taken into the homes, lives, families of those on whom the doctor had performed his successful operations. We saw the benefit to humanity, the healings, the resumption of happy, useful lives which were the results of this man's skill. Even when he was working under the influence of drugs, as he said, we were allowed to view the results of what he had accomplished. I was more than moved, I felt wrung with compassion and a new understanding. Here was a man, standing before the bar of his own judgment, and the scales were showing the balancing up of his actions, and the resulting effects of his service. And when we were shown the skill and success with which he brought a great musician back to health and strength, the scales seemed almost to balance. That musician, now in the halls of music in the spheres, was enabled to go on and leave the world the richer and more exalted by his performances, to add his portion to the beauty that penetrates the materialism of earth, thinking, to lighten, with glorious sound, that darkness into which men sink, and to uplift their spirits in thankfulness to the Creator. As the film of his life unwound before us, the doctor saw, though he could scarcely credit it, that he had indeed done his part. He had followed his pattern, worked out his blueprint, even though he had badly smudged it in the performance. At the end he saw. He understood. His fault had been a weakness in the soul's contact with the personality which he had allowed to widen until it threatened to break completely. But he had been released before that had happened. His failure had been his refusal to delve into that inner one whom he knew, to contact him deliberately and reverently at times other than when the celestial surgeon's skill was needed. The light had been within him and about him and he had comprehended it not. If I should say that there were tears in his eyes when the revelation ended, I would be partly right. There were tears in his soul, tears for lost opportunities, but also tears of relief. I am indeed learning that we must not judge from our very partial understanding. This man, failure as he had seemed, had achieved much. He had been a channel of light even though he had tried to ignore the implications of this, and even despite the fact that his personality had sunk into a bog of illusions. Dr. X is a soul with dedicated skill. He will go on to the greater light, the perhaps to realize his celestial surgeon more fully, more potently and intimately and to become united with him for future service. Judge not. But judge righteous judgment. But how can we learn to understand, not only people, but more of the great plan and pattern for each of us and for humanity? As I am allowed to witness and to assist those souls who gather here for a space, I gain knowledge and a very partial understanding of that plan, and this brings a deep humility, together with a reverence for the wonder and marvel of the divine creative thought. We went quietly back to our duties, leaving Dr. X in the competent care of Father Joseph. It could almost have been a Christmas-tide service, as on Earth, for truly a new child was born in those who partook of the ceremony. A new compassion and realization was born in me, and a new strength in Dr. X. As our consciousness expands, we let in more light. So now I can really say, with deeper understanding, let light descend on Earth. 3rd January, The Dream, H.G. Two nights after writing the last script, I dreamed of Francis. The dream was strangely haunting, yet vague and indefinite, so that, as I woke to human consciousness, I knew what had happened but the details were hazy. I had been in a garden which seemed to be set high on a hillside. The strange thing about the garden was that it seemed to be etched in my mind, like a Chinese painting, with a restraint on line so characteristic of Eastern art. I remember that there was a single forked apple tree on one side of the garden, but that was all, except an impression of space and vista. But the fact that everything was bathed in a soft golden light remained hauntingly with me. I knew that Frances was there with me, and she seemed to appear light and insubstantial, yet we talked together. When I awoke, though I could recall nothing of the conversation except what pertained to the closing words I will carry on from there, which I recall saying. But exactly what that meant to convey to me, my conscious mind could not, or would not, formulate. I am very sure though that the real self knows and will carry out the promise. 3rd January, Francis resumes, I have become great friends with Dr. X. He and I have long talks on all sorts of subjects. We are both sure that we have had links together in former lives. Yes. He accepts reincarnation. He says that, in his medical work, he had known how marvelous was nature in her precision, recapitulation and application, that life itself must be in a series. He confesses that the conviction that he had failed in this round haunted the last years of his time on Earth. Now, as you can understand and appreciate, he is eager to go on. He desires to learn, to become strong, to absorb light, and then return to Earth with his innate skill, but with a stronger link and memory of the spirit, and a true oneness with his soul. His is a great soul. I find him splendid and stimulating. His is the type of personality which, had I encountered as a young woman, would have intrigued me. He had realization of his inner self. He knew. But now, he groans whenever I point that out, because he feels that his failure was greater than the sin of ignorance. He was not strong enough to hold the contact with which he was cognizant. To me, this is an interesting point. He is an old soul, an advanced ego, And he knew. Many, many people do not even have that consolation of knowing of the power within, yet he could not, in his smaller self, maintain the contact. What technique could have helped him to maintain and strengthen it? The answer is that technique and method which has been known by the few throughout the ages, the technique of communion with the divine, of using an active will to close away the illusions of the earth and to open the channel into the divine source, into the light of conscious knowing. I tried, in my small way, and possibly quite unconvincingly, to teach on earth the value of meditation periods when the personality gravitates towards the light of the soul and spirit. I failed too, because in some ways I could not surmount my own personal barriers. Here I am learning so much more. I shall go on to talk of meditation and contemplation again later, and on the methods pertaining here. Also, as I am beginning to understand, the actual way in which these techniques work. There is nothing vague or woolly, I assure you. It is, as Mr. M. would have said, entirely a scientific process. But to proceed. I went with Dr. X to visit some of his contemporaries and his friends in another part of this new life. I suppose you would call this the higher planes. I cannot say for sure. Anyway, we found ourselves within a medical circle of souls. There were many souls and they radiated a joyous concentration that was catching. We soon found ourselves chatting away eagerly in groups. One was there who had been a great physician, a beloved physician, when on earth, a soul whose countenance was beautiful beyond any description of mine. He radiated spiritual love and beauty. He appeared to be a leader of this group. He spoke with Dr. X and I stood beside him, so lifted in thought and inspiration that I felt almost exalted. Yet I knew that I could not bear the high frequency of his vibration for long. This leader said that soon he would have the pleasure of welcoming Dr. X onto his staff. I was thrilled for my new, yet old, friend. I was so happy for him. It was a moment, I felt, of supreme achievement. Then we met the musician whose life on earth Dr. X had been able to prolong by his medical and surgical skill. The musician has promised to take us to the halls of music. He wasn't at all my idea of what a musician should be. He was gay, almost jolly, and he teased Dr. X. "So you have brought your nurse?" he asked. "I am still in a habit, not my nurse," the doctor answered, "my teacher. Sister and I have thrashed out many problems and puzzles together. You will be leaving the soon?" asked the musician. "Not before he has passed the 11 plus," I put in, not quite realizing what I was saying. Then I wanted to get away, feeling that I had made a gaffe. But they took it in good part. "Sister is quite right," Dr. X said, "and if this is the junior school work, then I can look forward, with great eagerness, to the upper classes." It was my most marvelous experience of this new aspect of life. I felt filled with light. That is the only way I can express it. But neither of us could hold this great intensity of vibration for long. We felt, so to speak, used up by this high frequency, so that, presently I, for one, had the strange experience of dwindling. And then we were both back in my garden and Sister Hilda was there to tell us that there was an urgent situation arisen in the home. But we had both had a taste of the beauty of the higher spheres and of communion with progressed souls. I felt as though I was shining. The light stayed with me. This is life. Life more abundant. The same day, 3rd January, later Sister Hilda and I returned to the home. Mother Florence awaited us. She took us apart and told us that a new, and very difficult patient had just been brought in. Quietly she told us the facts about this new arrival. The man had been a Nazi leader, well known and extremely powerful during the last war. After the downfall of Germany he had committed suicide. I cannot give his name, but it is not Hitler. Since that time he had been lodged in the shadows. Mother Florence explained that he had been wandering in the lower places. You would no doubt refer to this dark place as the lower astral. In any case, for 20 earth years, he had been imprisoned by his own evil. Now he had been rescued. He was conscious of his terrible cruelty and filled with remorse. Mother Florence warned us that he would need very special nursing, care, understanding and help. Also that we might get a shock at his appearance, which, I gathered, was not a sight such as I had ever witnessed. Mother also warned us to draw a web of protection around us and to hold firmly to the light. I was apprehensive as we went towards a separate ward at the far end of the home, but not prepared for the sight that met us.